This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. You know those ads on the back of magazines that advertise, "Send us your lyrics and we'll set them to music"? Don't you wonder what the results sounded like? Well, Ellery Eskelin recently found out that his late father, Rod Keith, was one of the composers who was hired to set those lyrics to music, then perform and record the songs. These unusual records, now collector's items, are some of the best clues Eskelin has about his father's life. You see, Ellery Eskelin's parents divorced shortly after he was born, and his father died in a mysterious accident or suicide when Eskelin was a child. Nevertheless, Eskelin has kind of followed in his father's footsteps. He's a composer and saxophonist, but the music he plays is jazz and free improvisation. Now Ellery Eskelin has compiled a CD collecting some of his father's songs. The CD is called I Died Today. I asked Ellery Eskelin to describe the music that his father wrote.
It's called song poem music, and I consider it a genre unto itself. It's the result of those ads that people have probably seen in the backs of magazines, in which companies solicit the public to send in their lyrics. Their lyrics then get the full studio treatment by Hollywood's finest, set to music and recorded, and with that, you're on your way to fame and stardom.
So the idea is you write a poem, you write a lyric, you mail it in, and for a fee, the composers who work for this company will set it to music and give
exactly.
you a studio recording of it.
Exactly.
And then do they make you any promises about what's going to happen to that recording? Do they promise you're going to become a famous songwriter or a star? Or it'll...
Well, that's the inference.
Mm-hmm.
As far as promises, I don't think the promises went much farther than the fact that the records might be sent around or even played on radio stations. Whether those promises were honored in every case, well, that's open to conjecture. So song poems, that's what the polite way of putting it. The people who are in the industry called it song sharking.
Why did they call it that?
Well, I guess because it's something just short of being a scam in a way. You're sort of preying on people's instincts for, fame or notoriety. I can't really defend the practice much more than to say that there were a lot of clients who I think were just simply thrilled to have their music on a disc and have their name on a record, because, in fact, there were many repeat clients. It was sort of a vanity thing for many people as to whether they thought they were going to get famous. If they did think that, it was unfortunate, and that's where the possible scam comes in.
So your father would crank out up to 30 melodies a day for these lyrics.
Yeah, he was a very gifted musician, and he was able to do this kind of work very easily. It was sort of his, I guess you might call it a day job, in as much as it was his means to make a living while he pursued, I'm not quite sure what else he pursued, but this is what we have left.
Why don't we hear the title track of the new record that you've produced,
mm-hmm.
of the songs that your father did while working for one of these companies, actually while working for several of these companies.
Mm-hmm.
And the title track is called I Died Today. Tell us what you know or what you find interesting about this track before we hear it.
It's simply one of many records that I recently came across. My uncle, Gerald Eskelin, who is an active musician in Los Angeles, Rod's brother, has been keeping a box of records over the many years, and I recently found them, and this was one of them. I don't really know what to make of it. When I sit back and think about the person who must have sent these lyrics in, it's sort of chilling on the one hand, or maybe it's just someone's imaginative take. I'm not sure what their intent was in this being a hit record, but it's one of my favorites.
Well, let's hear the title track of I Died Today, the anthology that you put together of your father's songs, the melodies that he created for other people's lyrics. And we'll hear your father, Rod Keith, singing and at the keyboard.
It was a dark and a rainy night. My headlights were really too bright. I was thinking of my kids and of my darling wife. Thank you. sales were down, my pay was small, and I needed money bad. I couldn't pay the mortgage to even keep the things we had. Then through the night there came a light. A hobo wanted a ride. I brought my old car to a stop, and he got in by my side. We continued on, just we two. His presence seemed to calm my nerves, but the road was wet and my vision blurred, and I didn't see the curve. When I awoke, I saw the flames and the people through the trees. I knew from their conversation they thought the hobo was me.
That's I Die Today, the title track of a new collection that was produced by my guest, Ellery Eskelin. And Ellery's father, Rod Keith, wrote the melody to the song we heard. It was also his voice that we heard. He was at the keyboards. And he was basically paid by this music house to set lyrics that were sent in through the mail, to set those lyrics to music. Now, your father was sent lyrics that were supposed to fit into every genre. So he had to write songs around every genre: dance crazes, novelties, romantic ballads, patriotic anthems.
Right.
Let's hear one of the kind of hippie dance tunes that he did. This is something called Hippie Happy Land.
Right.
And again, he's singing, and I guess on keyboards. Anything that you know about this song, or any feelings that you have about it?
Again, just that I'm just... As is the case with most of these songs, you know, they're just sort of just what they are. But I think Rod really brings to each one a surprising little twist, or just a little bit more than you might expect from these proceedings, if you will. When you listen to the words, sometimes they can be funny or even a little inane. But he really brings himself to it with a lot of vigor and 100% of himself, even if it might be a little tongue-in-cheek. And, you know, that's certainly the case with this one.
Let's hear it. This is Hippie Happy Land. I think if I was a composer and I was sent those lyrics to put to music, I just wanted, you know, I just kind of call it quits. I would be in such despair. I mean, you must often ask yourself, what was your father's frame of mind when he was getting all these inane lyrics?
It's a very intriguing thought, because the more of these pieces I hear, the more I really appreciate that. They're really from the entire spectrum of pop music, plus a lot of hybrids that I think he created himself due to these lyrics.
My guest is jazz musician Ellery Eskelin. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is jazz composer and musician Ellery Eskelin. He's compiled a CD of his father's songs, songs he wrote around lyrics mailed in by the public in response to ads in the back of magazines saying, "Send us your lyrics and we'll make them into songs." Now, you never really knew your father. Your parents separated when you were very young.
Yeah.
And your father stayed in Los Angeles. You and your parents moved to Baltimore, I believe?
Mm-hmm. That's where my mother is originally from.
So, the only information you have about your father is what relatives have told you and what you've heard from these records. Have these records changed your idea of who your father was?
I guess they haven't changed it so much. I think they represent an accurate, if only partial, picture of who he was. When I was growing up, I was told many, many stories of my father's talent and idiosyncrasies. He was described as being quite the charming eccentric. And as I became serious about music myself and began playing saxophone at age 10, these stories really started to have a profound effect on me. Unfortunately, Rod died in 1974, very tragically, and before I ever had a chance to really make his acquaintance or communicate with him in much of any way, it was over. So I've had these stories as part of my life now. I'm 37, and this music has recently come to my attention only in the last maybe 2 years. I was aware that Rod did this kind of stuff, and I had even heard a few examples when I was a teenager, and at the time I wasn't that impressed because it just didn't seem to sort of coincide with the sort of genius that everyone had been talking about. But now that I've heard so many of them and I can put them in a context of just exactly what the nature of the business was and just imagine what it must have taken to be able to accomplish the task, I'm actually quite impressed. He has had to have been quite an imaginative guy, I think, to be able to do as many of these things off the top of his head is the way I'm told that he could do them. It was just almost effortless.
Well, as I said before, he wrote in all kinds of genres, novelty dance tunes like Do the Pig and Do the Turkey, and romantic ballads. There's even a patriotic number, a patriotic anthem that you have on the new record called I Am a Real American. And for listeners just joining us, again, my guest is Ellery Eskelin, and he's a jazz musician. His father, who died in 1974, specialized in setting other people's lyrics to music. And he basically worked at a house where this is what they did. They advertised in the backs of magazines and asked people to send in their poems and lyrics. And they tell you professional musicians would set it to music and mail the results back to you. So here's one of the results. This is a lyric that was mailed to your father. I am a real American, and we'll hear your father doing the voice on this.
First of all, allow me to make myself perfectly clear. Dear Lord, help us to love each other instead of fear. I believe in the Constitution of the USA. I respect the Holy Bible, every word it says. I believe in human rights, regardless of color. And I will not allow myself to mislead others. My utmost aim in life is to love and respect my wife, my family, neighbors, love them all as one, for this God gave his only son. I believe utmost in integrity and unity, educational equality with divine obligation.
Are these records the only times that you've heard your father's voice?
Yes, they are. They are. I was just trying to think if there were any other. No, this is exactly it. And so that's been pretty interesting because along with the stylistic compass that Rod used, which is pretty wide, he was very agile with his voice, and so on a country tune he's got a certain sound, and on a rock tune he's got a slightly different sound, and he was a little bit chameleonic with it. There's very few instances of his speaking voice that I've found yet, with the exception of some old studio tapes where he's introducing or slating the song in between the vocal, and there might be a little bit of joking around or asides or something like that, which are pretty interesting. He had quite a knack, I understand, for linguistics in general, and he would do things with the play on words and even make up his own words and talk backwards and everything else. So that's pretty intriguing. Question, actually. That's something I've thought about a lot.
Your father was such the mystery man in a way. I mean, you never really knew him because he died when you were young.
Right.
The music that we have of his is these melodies that he set to other people's lyrics. He even died in a really mysterious way. In fact, you've printed a copy of the obituary, so I think mm-hmm. I'll read it. It says, this was of December of 1974. Leaping or falling from an overcrossing onto the Hollywood freeway, a man identified as Rodney Eskelin, 37, address unknown, was struck by numerous cars and killed. Police said the victim plunged down the Santa Monica Boulevard overpass onto the northbound freeway at about 5:10 a.m., and drivers could not avoid him. Does your family have any clues about whether this was an accident or suicide?
I guess there are clues either way, and at this point it seems to be equally divided. I've never met anyone, or I've met very few people, let's put it that way, who have a definitive opinion one way or another, and it seems that the best that anybody can come up with is that it could have been either. It could have just as easily been an accident, or it could have just as easily been intentional. And for me, I've sort of, for the longest time, you know, gone back and forth in my own mind, but I think finally I sort of can be prepared for, if I should ever find out, you know, what it was, I could be prepared for either of those two. But that's been another very profound aspect of this story for me, just because of the circumstances of his life, especially in the last few years. He was very much into hallucinogens, almost in a religious, mystical kind of way. I think he had a very naive curiosity towards spiritual matters. You have to remember that he comes from a very strong religious background, which he then sort of rejected, at least in as much as the formal part of it, the church itself, although I think he retained a very deep spiritual feeling, and drugs came into his life, and I think he integrated that into who he was. And so a lot of what he was trying to do, or what he thought he was trying to do, might have been an experimentation or a flirtation with life on the other side. On the other hand, it could have very well been a very careless act. He was known to walk on high balconies just to sort of freak people out. He, on the one hand, had very deep spiritual feelings, but on the other hand, ironically, could take life not very seriously at all, which I understand, you know, that it's sort of an attractive thing that somebody can, you know, a very intelligent guy who is just very carefree, would never really get angry or upset, and could just sort of live and let live and take life as it came, and, you know, had a very even-handed philosophy towards life. But on the other hand, he definitely had some intense things driving at him that I still haven't really gotten to the bottom of, and I, you know, at this point it's just conjecture as to what you know, what that final day was like.
You think he might have been manic depressive?
That's a theory of one of Rod's close friends from the end of his life. Yeah, she, in retrospect, seems to recognize some of those attributes. At the time, I don't think people quite knew, or maybe they did, but she was very young at the time, and I think now she has a strong feeling that he may have been. It may have been something that was exacerbated by constant drug use, or it may have been something that he was trying to self-medicate against. I can't truly say.
You know, if your father was depressive and prone to suicide, if this really was a suicide, then I can't help but think what it must have been like for him to always have to set to music. Lyrics written, one would imagine, by often lonely, not very talented people. I mean, that could be a really depressing experience.
I agree with you. I mean, he did this for a long time. I understand that he was frustrated that he couldn't seem to find more legitimate work, but then, from what I know, his lifestyle became more and more avant-garde, in as much as he just was sort of undependable, and even the people who were closest to him towards the end found it harder and harder to even deal with him. He was just not showing up on time. Sessions were late or delayed. He would just drop off the face of the earth for days or weeks at a time. So that right there, I think, interfered with his any plans or aspirations he might have had to make it in the larger music world.
My guest is jazz composer and saxophonist Ellery Eskelin. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is jazz composer and saxophonist Ellery Eskelin. He's compiled a CD of his father's songs, songs he wrote around lyrics mailed in by the public in response to ads in the back of magazines saying, "Send us your lyrics and we'll make them into songs." Your mother told you that before your parents separated, your father would play music for you when you were, what, 2 years old or something. He'd play his favorite progressive jazz records for you. Any
right.
idea of what those records were that he'd play for you when you were very, very young?
Well, he liked jazz. Jazz was his favorite music at the time. My mother plays Hammond B3 organ, and they had a duet, and they played music together. And she tells me that they played a lot of things, but jazz is his sort of love. I know he liked The Four Freshmen and other things at that time. The only record that I can ascertained for certain was played in my crib was Stan Kenton's City of Glass. And I heard about this record all my life. Whenever anybody wanted to sort of allude to the most far-out thing they could think of, it was invariably Stan Kenton's City of Glass. And my mother was just sure that Rod was going to frighten me with this music, that I was too young, and that it frightened her. And so it's ironic because I never did really get to hear that piece of music until recently. I think it was just reissued on CD, and I've always been a big Stan Kenton fan myself, and I finally got that music some months ago and listened to it, and I was pretty impressed. I think it was written in sometime in the 50s, and at that time especially, I'm sure that it really just was the end to most people.
So your mother plays organ?
Mm-hmm.
In clubs, bars?
She did. She used to. When I was up until the time I was about 6 years old, she had her own group in Baltimore, Maryland. She played in clubs up until around 1966. And she still has the organ in her basement. And whenever I go down to visit, I take my saxophone and I cajole her into firing up the organ, and we go down and play a few tunes together. She still sounds great.
Huh. Now, do you think that those records that your father played for you when you were in your crib helped develop your ear and interest in music?
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, I guess, honestly, I can't really say for sure, but it's a very attractive idea, isn't it? I think it's something that I've always kind of held special because it's one of the few ways that I can say I really had a contact with my father.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, the only other one was indirectly through my grandmother, Rod's mother. She began writing us letters when I was around 13 or 14 years old and sort of, you know, making the connection between the families again. And there was plans of sending me out to visit and meet Rod. And I guess I had sent her a letter, and I told her all about my love of the saxophone and what I was doing, and she wrote me back saying that she had showed the letter to Rod and that he had said that he was proud of my talent in the music field. And, you know, I look back at that as being maybe the only sliver of communication, you know, besides those records in my room when I was 1.5 years old that I still have to hold, you know, dear to my heart. And, you know, I really do.
Now, you're a jazz composer and tenor saxophonist yourself.
Right.
And your new CD, The Sun Died, is, and that's S-U-N, is a tribute to Gene Ammons. And I'd like to go out with a track from that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we could play the last track, The Light. And
sure.
This is an old spiritual?
Yeah, I think it is. Gene Ammons did a record in the 60s called Preachin', in which he did a half dozen, well, I should say a dozen or so spirituals and church hymns and the like. And we picked a couple of them for this record, and that's one of them.
Okay. So this is The Light from Ellery Eskelin's new CD, The Sun Died, with Ellery on tenor, Mark Ribot guitar, and Kenny Wollison drums. Eskelin from his CD, The Sun Died. The collection he produced of records by his father, Rod Keith, is called I Died Today.